Hey you guys, this is Tara. Welcome to the Horse Trader's Diary. We're going to do question and answer part two because the questions have kept coming. So we're going to get some hot fire freaking podcast out while we are headed home from New Mexico. And I'm going to sip on a drink and answer some more questions. All right, Aspen.
Okay, where should we start here?
Nothing too strenuous. Let's start easy and work our way into it.
I was going to say. Where did you meet Aspen?
So, I put a help wanted. Post up. And she responded. No.
You don't remember?
No.
I called you. I'll answer this.
Okay.
I called you about... Oh, I found you on Facebook.
Okay.
And I called you for my friend that was down in Texas about horses that you had for sale. Because she was wanting to buy some.
Okay, I do remember that.
Okay, now you can finish.
But I thought... Okay, but I thought that was after you saw my help wanted.
Nope.
Okay.
Because then you explained to me what was going on and you were looking for help and then we got into that conversation.
Okay. I thought... Well... Okay. So, I put a help wanted sign up on Facebook. And the next morning, I get a call from Aspen. And I thought she had just seen my help wanted sign. Because in the conversation, she was like, I have a really good friend that had come down to the Bowie sale. And they really hadn't bought... Right, they were at Bowie.
Yeah.
And they really hadn't bought enough. So... Or did they go to Anderson County?
It was Bowie.
So they went to Bowie, didn't buy enough horses. I do remember that conversation.
Yeah.
But I just thought that you were like, hey, I'm Aspen. I have some friends down there. Oh, and by the way, like, since you're hiring, can you give me some details about the job?
Yeah, we rolled into that conversation.
Yeah, so I just... One. Yeah, we did. So I just thought... Because her friend really... Truthfully... I felt like you were just trying to break the ice. Like, I know horse traders. And I mean, I didn't know.
I was calling for her to try and buy some, but she was kind of being a cheapskate and didn't want to spend that much. And so.
Well, and that's why, here's the thing about the horse market. It's continually gotten higher. And I think that people have a misconception.
Yes.
Of what the horse market is right now. Because horses are high. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can catalog horses to horse sales. But here's why I don't love it. I don't love not knowing where they go, and I don't love not having a relationship with the people who buy them, because truthfully, we might make more money if we send them to sales.
Yeah. Well, and the horses that you were talking to me about were Pops Racer and Slim, and so...
Because she wanted registered, like, race bred or registered ranch geldings that they could put a little time on and flip.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, so... I feel like I met Aspen off of a hey, I'm hiring Facebook thing. But Aspen was smart because she got a plane ticket and she flew in and she stayed with me an entire week and then flew home to make sure that she even liked it enough here to do this job. And I think that that's brilliant. I think that's smart. I know a lot of people that take jobs and move across the country only to find out it's not for them. So... Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know one thing. Aspen is family and I wouldn't give her back, so.
I can't run away even if I try.
No, we find you.
What did you want to be when you were little? Are these questions for both of us or?
Yeah, both answer them. So you go ahead. What did you want to be, Aspen, when you were little?
When I was little, I had this huge fan. Wow, if I can
talk.
Hey guys. Well, I really, 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 really wanted to be a vet.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that was everything. I watched shows. I pretended to be a vet. I would get all this weird little stuff out and practice on the dogs, doing weird stuff.
Right.
And I just, when I was little, I wanted to be a vet.
Awesome.
Yep.
I just wanted to go to the barn. I lived in El Paso, Texas. Went to school. That's where I went to kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade. And we lived in a cul-de-sac. I lived in a single-wide trailer. And I had a really good childhood. My mom is a blast, which is why my child always wants to be with her. My mom is, like, the funnest person in the world. So, my mom made my childhood really great. But my mom and dad will both tell you, I just wanted to be at the barn. I have this weird love affair with horses that's just, it's different than most people's, but it's not. It's not. I think that society just makes us outgrow that love affair, and I just somehow never lost it. Does that make sense? Like, I just never lost that love affair of, like, I have Frisians for no other reason except for they're just beautiful to me. They're beautiful, and they're elegant, and they're mine, and so I still have that really weird, and they kind of give me this nostalgic feeling when I'm around them of, like, I can just, being a little girl, do you remember they used to have, like, I don't remember what it was called, do you remember you used to go to Walmart and you could get the horse magazine?
Yes.
And then in the back, they would have, like, the classifieds, and there would always be, like, Hackney Pony ads.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, very bougie.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking in 1990 something, like, you were way not even born yet.
Well, there were still several things that magazines and books and stuff that I picked up, and they had those in the back too.
Yeah, but it was all, and I just remember the first time I ever picked up, I was sitting in the floor in Ruidosa in our cabin, and I remember the first time I saw, like, actual, like, Frisians for sale, and I called, like, on a house dial phone, and I was a kid, and the lady answered, and she was so nice to me. She was like, I'm serious. Like, she was so nice to me. I was like, hello, you have these, I don't even remember what I called them. And she was like, well, I remember her telling me, well, they're not pronounced like that. It's Frisian. And they are magical. And I told her how great they were and how I saw the pictures in the magazines. And I was going to talk to my parents. And you know what she said to me on the phone? It was the coolest thing ever. She was, like, from Virginia or Vermont or somewhere. Like, way. I mean, she had, like, kind of a thick, you know, northeastern accent. She said, well, I'll tell you this. I never got to have Frisians till I was an adult. So I just want you to never lose your dream of having one. So just clip the ad out of the back and just remember that someday, even if it's when you're an adult, if you want a Frisian, you know where to find me.
Aww.
And I just thought that was, I still to this day just remember that every now and again. And it's like one of those moments in life that just sticks because, well, I mean, who does that? You know? Like, I was a kid. Like, I was, like, 7. And I'm like, hello, I just love Frisians. And she's like, it's Frisians, and I love them too.
Frisians.
Oh, my God. Aww. She was so nice to me, you know? And so I got in trouble. Like, actually, my mom and dad ended up taking the house phone and keeping it on top of the fridge.
Oh,
because
goodness.
I got in trouble because people would end up calling back later once caller ID was a thing to, like, tell my parents, like, hey, by the way, your kid, like, keeps calling and leaving me messages about horses. And I finally got in trouble because I would call, like, all the classified ads and just, maybe I just always had a love affair with selling horses. I don't know. But I remember, oh, and I was so in love with Frisians, and I would make up stories, like, about my Frisian and how it was a descendant of, like, medieval war Frisians, and it said, save, you know, Joan of Arc's horse. And I'm not even kidding. Like, I would make up these, like, crazy stories in my head about, you know, my Frisian that was, and now that I have Cambria, I know everybody's like, well, Victoria is an Imperial Frisian, and she's spotted, and she has a blanket, and I'm like, but I love Cambria because in my mind, she is that, she is, like, the epitome of that Frisian that when I was a 7-year-old little girl calling that lady that I just, ugh, I don't know.
Is she going to grow up to be one of those big, black,
yeah,
beautiful Frisians?
Yeah, she's a heritage Frisian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's by a heritage Frisian stallion out of a gypsy drum mare.
Okay.
So she's a quarter gypsy, a quarter paint, and half heritage Frisian.
Can I spend my night, because this is for the summer with you, please?
No. No.
Nope. Sorry.
Sorry. Not that we don't like your children, but even my child spends the summer with her grandparents.
Yeah. No. That is a no. Sorry.
We're so sorry. I have one, and I love her, but ma'am, whenever we got ready to leave, and she was like, I want to stay with my Grammy. And my mom was like, please, please let her stay. She's really helping my mind to stay off of, like, being stressed out about your dad having a heart attack. Because at first I was like, no, I just am scared. If anything happens and you have to take dad back to the emergency room, I don't want Tinley here, you know? And my mom was like, look, she just really helps your dad and I both take our minds off of everything that just happened. So just for a couple of days, let her stay so that we can... So, like, on one hand, I'm like, okay, I feel kind of irresponsible. But on the other hand, my child was like, peace out, bitches! Like, yeah. Literally, she got in my mom's truck so fast, it was crazy. I was like, well, okay, bye, little person. Like,
she tells me she doesn't love me when she's around Grammy.
Yeah, she'll be like, Aspen, I love you, but not more than my Grammy.
Yeah.
My child, she loves my mom. My mom will take your 9 kids for the summer.
Yeah.
My mom wishes I would have 9 more. My mom is such a great person with kids. I love her.
She's awesome.
Okay.
I really don't want to answer this one right now.
Which one?
There's one for me. She said, this one is for you, Aspen. Hi, Aspen. What are the steps you use from start to finish when breaking a young horse? Should I answer it?
Yeah, we do things different. Aspen and I probably do it differently that way.
Well,
you answer it, then I'll answer it.
Okay. Well, when I'm starting a young horse, and I mean, all young horses are different temperament-wise and everything, so some take more work and some take less. But, of course, you start from the ground up. Get control of their feet, because if you don't have control of their feet on the ground, then you're not going to have control on top.
Right.
So, desensitize, sack them out before you just throw saddle on, because you throw saddle on, cinch them up, you're going to initiate that flight response, and it can be hard to get out of them. So sack them out, start saddling them. Normally before I saddle, sometimes I'll ground drive first. And I also do everything from both sides. So if you do it on the left side, you need to do it from the right side.
Right.
Never had to explain this before. I just do it.
Right.
So it's a lot of the explaining stuff is new to me, so just bear with me. So once I finish ground driving, getting control of the feet, and getting a directional sense from the ground, then I'll start kind of stepping up on them and bellying up. And
Do you like to get on them bareback a bunch before you get on them with a saddle? Like, just on and off? Or do you like to saddle them and get on them?
I have got on them bareback, but I don't know if you guys know, but I also grew up with cowboys.
Yeah.
So, when I was by myself and they weren't watching, I would ride in a halter and bareback.
Yep.
So, the first horse I ever started on my own, I put a halter on, did everything on the ground, and I got on him bareback first and did everything bareback, and then I saddled him, and I did put a bit in his mouth, and I ground drove him and bellied up with the saddle and patted on his sides, and then while I was bellied up, I would pull my left rein and have him take a few steps while I'm bellied up to make sure they're comfortable with the weight being on them. And after a few times of me bellying up on both sides, then I would swing my leg up, sit up there for a minute, pet them, move your legs around, let them know you're actually up there so they can breathe. And then I'd step off and walk off a step or two, come back, get back on. And depending on how the horse is, you can do more in one day, or you need to break it up a lot.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it really depends on the horse. Every horse is different.
They are. So, I totally agree with everything Aspen said. So, my dad trains racehorses, obviously. And so, I also worked for a long, long time for Equiglow. I feel like my foundation was split between the two because I used to work at my dad's part-time and then Equiglobe part-time. My thing was, is in the summer when my dad went to Ridosa, my little sister was tiny. Like, my sister is 16 years younger than me, almost 15 and a half years younger than me. So my mom didn't go to Ridosa for a couple of summers, and I would stay home and, like, feed for my dad and gallop some racehorses for dad and take care of, like, what stayed at his barn at home. So it was always, like, young horses that weren't mature enough to go to Ridosa that were, like, gonna not run till the fall. So they had to, like, basically be started from the ground. So I actually started ground driving horses for my dad when I was 12.
Yep.
So I'm a little different. So my dad's big thing about horses is that if they are not desensitized enough, they're not ready to go on with.
Yes.
And Hartman was the opposite. He felt like you could desensitize them too much and take the, for lack of better words, like you could kind of take the, I don't want to say the character out of them, or you could take like the, you know, he was German, so.
Well, you can desensitize a horse in too much.
Continue on to I-20 East.
There's desensitizing and sensitizing a horse.
So what's really funny is my dad would start with them like in the round pen, and then he would saddle them, put a head stall on them, and just, you know, with a halter under the bridle, and then we would set their heads for a good headset, and we would run them in the round pen with their headset a lot. And then my dad would move on to what you guys would probably recognize it more like a Pessoa training system type thing. But my dad used to just have driving lines, and it had a thing that went over the head and through the bit. Mm-hmm. So it was more like draw reins. It went through the, between their legs, and then you drove them, you know, then through the stirrups.
Yeah. That's what we did.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know how to explain.
Yeah. So Hartman, being from an English background, you would think that he would do all of those steps so that when you got on them, they would be collected and, you know, in your hands. And he was the opposite. He wanted them to be more free, and that for all the collection that they learned to be under saddle. So it was very weird to have two very, very amazing horsemen who make a living at horses do things so differently. And you know what I took away from that? There have been horses that I've had that I started to do it my dad's way, and I could tell that they were getting dull. And it was better to just get on them and go.
Yep.
They did not want to be ground drove. They couldn't handle the pressure.
Yep.
They just, and I've had some that we started to saddle and get on, and they were going to fight you and be a fucking piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad in the back of my head would be, a horse doesn't know what it costs. It doesn't know if it's good or bad. It only knows how you treat it. And there I am, like, putting driving lines on it, and I'm going to drive this sucker for 2 weeks because I am not going to fight you. You are not going to be a piece of shit. You are not going to hurt someone. Because both my dad and Hartman have said something in my life that I will never forget. It's the exact same thing. And when Hartman said it, and I've heard my dad say it, and it was crazy. It was like that moment of like, ah, you do come from the same world, you know? And it was this, and it's so simple, but if you have young horses, you have to remember that you're the foundation for the rest of their life.
Yes, I have heard that several times.
When they leave you, if they end up in a kill pen later on or something, it's because you failed from the get-go. Every horse, so I've heard a million horse traders say never buy one back. I've heard a million horse traders, I actually don't want to name drop because I don't have a ton of good to say about a cutting horse facility that I worked at. And they were like, oh, it's bad luck to buy them back, you know, like, but truthfully, it wasn't that it was bad luck. It was that they shortcutted those horses so fucking bad, they didn't want them back, you know?
And they did no justice for the horse.
No, and my dad and Hartman have always said, if you sell a horse to someone and it doesn't work, you know, they always need to have a fallback to where, I'm not going to refund you, but if you get the horse back to my property, I'll reassess it. I will see what has happened, and I will quote you on value, and I will trade you out of this horse for something that will work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's just to protect the horse. Like, so it was kind of cool that I've grown up with two separate horsemen one that just trains racehorses for a living and that has won the All-American, and one that sold horses for a living and literally had to sell horses for profit to make a living.
Yep.
I mean, a horse trader, a very, very professional one, but for them to have so much respect for the animal, it was kind of cool, you know? So anyway, back to the whole breaking thing. I've just always taken groundwork and desensitizing really serious, because you have to find that line of what's best for the horse, so that when they leave you, you've set them up for success from that point forward.
Yes.
Period. Like, and you always, so my dad will always tell you, if he, my dad has bought horses from Kaufman. My dad bought one from Lone Star Kilpin. And I, you know, they're my competition. They're, you know, I don't really think that, because I genuinely kind of think they're beneath what I do. But I mean, they also rail kill horses, you know, but I don't feel like they do the job I do. But it was horses that, like, my dad either had in his barn for a layup. There was a horse at Kaufman, and he had a horrible back leg that I think they wanted like $2,300 for him because of his papers. And his dam was the dam of a horse that had won the All-American. You know, like, he was, Senator Sessions was his name, and he had like a big back leg. Like, you didn't know if he had kicked through the fence. You didn't know if it was broke. They wanted like $2,300 or something for him. Crazy. And my dad carted his fucking ass down there and bought him. And I was like, that is fucking highway robbery for something that's like three-legged. Dad took him home, x-rayed all of the leg, found out that it was just, he had probably just kicked like through the fence. My dad laid him up. And do you know that the only ties that my dad had to that horse is that it stayed at his house for 2 weeks, a year and a half before that, in between Remington and Redosa. Like, the hauler was like, hey, can this, I need to go to Iowa and drop some horses off, and this one is coming from the same trainer. Can we work out for it to stay at your facility so it's
not being drug around the country?
Right. And I'll pick it back up. And my dad said that he just loved that horse. He had great personality. And I mean, my dad goes, my parents are not super wealthy by anybody's standards. So my dad had like $3,500 in this horse by the time he like got done with all the vet work and stuff. And then he just rehomed him to some guys, and they like send out updates all the time. And I still to this day just laugh. I mean, my dad went to Lone Star and picked one up, and when my dad got there, it ended up having strangles. And my dad was like, well, I can't take it back to my house. So this was the funniest story in the world. He calls me and he's like, hey, I've done a thing. And I'm like, what did you do? And he's like, this horse I used to train ended up in a kill pen. And I was like, which one? And he's like, watch which one. And he's like, Lone Star. And I'm like, do you want me to call her? And he's like, oh, do you know her? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, actually, I'm here. And he's like, it's got strangles. And I'm like, okay. And so he's like, but I mean, can I bring it to your house? And I'm like, no, I'm in Louisiana. And Louisiana is like a disease reporting state. And my dad's like, what does that have to do with anything? And I'm like, I can't. Like, if they find out I have a horse with strangles, like, they quarantine the whole facility here.
Yeah.
Louisiana is so different than Texas or Oklahoma. So he's like, what do I do with it? And I was like, well, don't take it to your house. And I was like, don't put it in your trailer.
Continue on to I-20 East.
So anyway, my dad, so funny. He, you know, and he's had strangles before. I mean, he just didn't want to take that to his racehorses, you know? So I end up calling a friend of mine here in Texas that quarantined some horses. And I'm like, hey, can my dad bring this horse? She's like, oh, yeah, no problem. It was Holler Mama. And she's like, I've got like a round pin. So anyway, then he gets there, and she helps him scrub out the trailer, take all the rubber mats out. Then when he left, he forgot his rubber mats. It was just, I mean, one of those situations to where you're like, oh, geez. So then the horse gets better, and like 45 days later, like, it's been fully quarantined, vaccinated, everything. She takes it to my dad, and it still lives there to this day, just like outside. It's just so funny because I want to say he gave like $1,800 for it or something, you know, and he shows up and it's like emaciated and has strangles and, you know, so then Jessie has to take it and quarantine it, and she doesn't do that for the public, but she's like, I don't mind for your dad. And it was just so funny. Like, it's just, that's my dad though. You know what I mean? Like, and then I was like, why didn't you call me? And I could have handled, and he was like, well, I just didn't, you know, like that was... Well,
stay in the left lane.
So I'm just telling y'all, my dad is just very, very compassionate. Now that Aspen has met him, she's probably laughs a little because my dad is a great man and he's a great dad, but my dad is soft.
He is.
My dad is soft. He's very, like, he just hugged Tinley and bawled. You know, and he's had a heart attack, so you have to understand. I'm sure that, like, there's a lot going on emotionally that you survive a massive heart attack, which my dad is very...
Continue on.
Not overweight. My dad, yeah, not overweight, not... So for that to happen, we were, you know, very fit, still very active. But I will tell you that my dad is very soft, and it's funny that I didn't want a soft man. Like, Jacob is not soft at all.
For 182 miles, continue straight.
Hang on, you guys. My GPS is talking to us. My GPS is named Gypsy. Gypsy the Gypsy.
Gypsy the Gypsy.
Yes. So, anyway, I don't know how we got off on this subject from...
You veer off a lot.
I do. Go ahead. Next question.
Stories from his dad about the crash in Roswell.
Okay, so my dad is not from Roswell. My mom is. And abso-freaking-lutely, I was born there, so I know everything. I know everything. So my mom, my mother was born in El Paso, Texas, but she was raised in Roswell. My grandmother, my mom's mom, was the administrator of the hospital and the, like, where you check in. For 26 years there at Eastern, the hospital that just saved my dad's life. I was born in that same hospital that just saved my dad's life. And yes, we know lots about the alien crash. I tell people all the time that I'm a legal alien. I was born in New Mexico and I'm a legal alien.
Get it? Oh, I would say so.
So yes, yes. But my dad grew up in Plainview, Texas, and my dad's dad actually is still in Plainview, Texas. His name is Alan, and he is a barber, and he's fantastic, and his wife Judy is wonderful. So Alan and Judy, that's my dad's stepmom and his dad. And my dad's mom passed away from COPD. It's been a while. And his stepdad actually passed away right before, you know, just not too long before she did. So we have my dad's real dad and his stepmom, and then my mom's mom is still alive, Sue, Grandma Sue, and she's awesome. She's gonna be 90 this year. Next.
From each of you, what would be the single best piece of advice regarding horses you would give?
Go ahead, Aspen.
I would say...
Is that Deanna's question? Deanna Gold?
Yes.
I love her.
I'd say don't quit on yourself and don't quit on your horse.
That's great advice. I told Aspen earlier when we were kind of looking at some of these that this was a question I was going to make her answer first. Because I know them. Yeah, but don't quit yourself and don't quit your horse is a great... It's a great...
You can't be in a hurry being around horses.
At all.
No. If you're in a hurry, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
You can't rush into anything. Just don't quit and don't quit your horse.
So
that's what I would say.
I think that's great
advice.
Yeah. So, mine is kind of cheesy, but... My single advice for people with horses is to remember your why.
Yes.
It is so easy to get caught up in industry standards and society standards and to feel like... I have customers that buy horses from me and they board at a boarding facility. And their horse will get there and I will get these glowing... Oh my God, this is our first horse. It's here. I love it. Thank you. And within 5 days, a girl that boards at our barn told us that it's got like a crooked hawk and a ugly head. And, you know, she said it's not ever going to work for what we... And I just think that it is so easy to... Because the horse industry is full of really mean people. I want you to know that from me. Like, the horse industry is full of really fucking mean people. So... My single, just like my Frisians, that's the perfect story. Like, not to bring that back up, but like, I own Cambria because she just has this amazing ability to just kind of reattach me to my youth in a way. Mm-hmm. Like where I just have this really crazy nostalgic feeling of just like sitting in the living room thumbing through a magazine and I saw Frisian for the first time. I couldn't even pronounce its name. And just my why I love horses, why I ride horses, why I do this is because there's something magical about owning one. Not everybody can have one. If you honestly think about 20 people in your life, not all of them can own a horse. Most of them live in the city, they live in a house, but the horse is not a dog. So I'm just telling you that there is something magical about being a horse owner. It's easy to look around and get caught up in being a horse owner and wanting to be friends with other horse owners. But horse people have a weird way of turning everything into a competition. And it just shouldn't be that. Mm-hmm. Like,
I totally agree. Every aspect of the horse world.
Absolutely.
Different disciplines. There's always...
I said to somebody the other day, I said, you know, I got these Frisians and I just got them just sheerly for the joy. Like they don't have to do anything. They just make me happy. And one of the hate groups tore my Frisians apart. And there was no reason for that other than just jealousy. Mm-hmm. Like, so my pets are cooler than your pets. So you have a problem with it and you want to tear my freaking pets apart.
That's jealousy.
And so I want for you to know from me, don't ever lose your why. Like, if you purchase a horse from me or somewhere else, I want for when you lay your hands on that horse to you, for you to remember that little girl that was like, I just want to own a horse. Like, I just want to ride a horse. I just couldn't wait for school to get out to get to the barn. My mom used to try to plan activities on the weekends, and I just wanted to go to the horse races. Because I knew as soon as the races were over, we were going to go to the barn. It had nothing to do with watching horses race. I could have given two shits less, honestly. I just wanted to be around them. I wanted to, like, breathe the air they breathe.
Yeah. Well, and that was me when I was little. I didn't have horses growing up. And that's, well, how I got into the horse world was nobody was home and got home from school and I was walking up the road and, oh, there's these people riding horses on the left and I went down the driveway and said, hey guys,
can I ride?
Yeah, no, literally. I mean, I wanted to be around horses all the time. I wanted to ride. I wanted to brush. I mean, anything with horses.
Right.
I went to random strangers' houses and walked down their driveway and said, hey. And that's how I met one of the most amazing people in my life.
Right.
So, yeah, I love that.
Just remember your why. Like,
I love that.
There have been moments that Mortis was phenomenal. I won $65,000 on him. I sold him, and he ended up getting West Nile, mm-hmm. and had some issues, and they were having trouble, and they sent him back to me. And this was a moment that I ran him in there, turned the first barrel, got to the second, he jumped on the wrong side of it. I pulled him up, I petted him, and he was like totally freaked out. And I knew then that something was really wrong. I mean, he had done it with the girl that owned him. Mm-hmm. And so they brought him back to me to try to figure out why. And I told him, well, this isn't like him. So when I came out, I had a smile on my face and I was petting him. And the dad was like, why are you rewarding him for that? And he took the reins and he jerked him back. And I said, look, this isn't like him. Something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, he's a piece of shit. That's what's wrong. And I just remember being gutted because, I mean, this is a horse I had poured everything into. So, long story short, I ended up keeping him for like 90 days for free to just try to tune it out of him. So, finally, at like the end of 90 days, they call me and they're like, how's it going? And I tell them, like, it's not getting any better. Like, I've restarted him over to the left. I mean, sometimes he turns them, sometimes he doesn't. I've had him to 3 different vets, and the only thing that we can find is that his depth of perception is gone. So he doesn't know how far he is away from the barrels. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, what vet said that? And I told him. You know, Dr. Thoney had said it. Dr. Schwartz had seen him and agreed. And I told him, why don't you let me trade you out of him so that I can just retire him? And he said to me, you're a fucking crook. And I bet that horse is probably winning the barrel race and you're just trying to get him back for free. And I said, I don't want him back for free. And I'm telling you, nobody's winning the barrel race on him. Nobody. And anyway, they were there the next day to get him. And he wasn't mine, so... And I had kept him for 90 days for nothing. They didn't pay me a dollar. And anyway, they took him to like 5 or 6 more barrel races. Never got a time on him. And then he just kind of got passed around a little bit. And he ended up with a girl that ended up selling him, or I don't know. Or she sold him or lent him or something to Fallon, who ended up with him. But I learned in that moment that there is an entire world of people out there that don't have a why. They just solely base their self-worth on winning. And if they're not winning, they're not happy. And to me, that's not a horse person. That's a piece of shit.
Yep.
And so I have a hard time because I've never based my value as a horseman on winning something. So I'm very competitive. And I told Aspen this earlier. You know, I worked for Hartman and I really loved that. And when they left back for Canada, it left me kind of not knowing what I wanted to do. So I kind of started running barrels, and I worked at a cutting horse facility for a little bit and just was kind of trying to find my place again. And I started running barrels and I had a lot of success. And at first I thought, well, that's because this is what I was meant to do. And then my dad always kind of wanted me to train racehorses. I am a good horseman. He always thought that I could really be good at training racehorses. So I started training racehorses and I had a lot of success at that. And I was in magazines. Like there's several, like I was in Speed Horse magazine and Track magazine and the Thoroughbred magazine that's here in Texas. And they wrote a whole like 3-page article just on me and me training racehorses because I did have success and I did great. And I learned now that as much as it was a blessing, it was also kind of the devil's way of allowing me to have success at something that wasn't meant for me to stop me from finding my real purpose. Because it's easy to get wrapped up in thinking that you need to win something. Like, you own a horse, and so you need to find something to do with that horse, and you need to win. And I think that that is the biggest trick in the world that the devil plays. Because you buy a horse and now you think you have to meet some expectation, some standard, or go compete on it. And why can't we just fucking love our horse, man? Like, why can't I just have my Frisians out in the pasture and I just sometimes like to go smooch at them and watch them throw their tails up? Like, that brings me more joy in my life than just about anything except for my child, you and Jacob. Like, my most favorite thing outside of my circle of family is to just watch my Frisians romp.
Yep,
And it's funny because I think that that little question turned into a whole other podcast, but I think that that's important for people to remember your why. Like, just remember the little girl that just wanted to own a horse. Like, I just want to own my own horse.
Yep.
That I can go brush anytime I want to.
I love that.
And that's me. Like, Aspen will tell you, I'll go in the barn and I will be grooming the shit out of them. Oh, yeah. I will groom the shit out of the horses. And I just brush them. I brush their mane. I brush their tail. I put the tail bag in and I just love it. I don't even have to ride it. I just want to touch it.
Like, I want Corbin to bring me back my horse so goddamn bad. I just want to touch him and
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I just want him.
You just want him. Yes. And I will tell you that I don't even have a huge desire to, I mean, I do ride good and I train good, but I really just like to brush them. I will stand in the barn and brush and do therapy. And I think it's just because I just know that they haven't had that and it's just such a relief and they just feel so much better. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get my satisfaction from, just knowing I am making their life better.
Yeah. And I love doing that too, but I also love riding. I'm obsessed with writing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Even when I worked for Hartman and I rode lots of high-end horses, and I probably had the opportunity if I really would have wanted to show, mm-hmm. but I just loved and was so fulfilled with the horses coming and going. And just getting them ready and prepared to go. So it's funny because how many kids probably never got the opportunity to be around that caliber of jumping horse or dressage horse? Mm-hmm. And if they would have, they would have wanted to show them. They would have been dying to
Yeah.
And I really just never had that desire. I never begged for them to let me show them. And I mean, I schooled horses at home over 4 foot.
Yeah.
Starting at 13. I mean, I was a freaking hand now. Mm-hmm. And I started schooling horses at home over big fences fast because I had a great seat and soft hands. Mm-hmm. And I'm just telling you, I never begged. And they asked me, do you want to show? And I would go to some shows and kind of help. And I just never, that definitely wasn't my thing. I think I thought there for a minute, like I really loved jumping. And, but in the end, no. Like I just wanted to enjoy. And I think that's maybe why I'm such a girl's girl and I can kind of cheer for everyone because I know how hard people work to win at stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody gets their time. I will tell you this. Aspen is completely right on never give up on yourself or your horse. Because everybody gets their time to shine. And if you stick with it and you keep doing it, and that's one thing I can tell you, you can win at anything. You can be competitive at anything if you put your mind into it and you really work at it. Because I've seen riders that had no ability, no feel, buy a horse, fall off over jumps. I mean, just awful. And they would come and stay at the house for 2 or 3 weeks with Hartman. And he was German and he was a pickle, but just really have the desire. And he said sometimes the very best are those that have no ability but all the desire.
Yep.
Because they'll keep working at it, where I had a lot of ability and no desire, and I just never really, you know, it never stuck. So it's just different. I have a lot of ability, really soft hands, and I don't know. I mean, my why is just because I love to be in the presence of horses. I love them. If something happened and I could never ride again, I would still own horses so that I could just brush them.
Yep, me too.
I would just have a horse because horses are magical to me. And I think that that's something that people don't understand about me. They don't understand that I really just love horses and think they're that magical. I don't know. Okay, next question.
What's all your favorite colors and favorite foods? All your guys's is what I think she meant to say.
Yeah. Okay, so what's your favorite color?
My favorite color is like teal, mm-hmm. turquoise, blue, anything blue.
Blue.
And favorite food would be, I don't know. I like food. steak.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite like healthy foods is a chicken Caesar salad. I don't know if that's very healthy, but it's got green in it, so.
Yeah. So I answered this earlier. My favorite color is gray. I like steel gray. Then purple. Then red.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. My favorite food is green chili chicken enchiladas with sour cream sauce. Flour tortillas. My second favorite food would be a filet. If it's too thick, butterflied, medium well. I love asparagus. I love asparagus.
Me too.
So, So what's your favorite color horse? Do you have one? Is this mine?
You know, I couldn't, no. I probably couldn't pick one. I could give you three. Mm-hmm. I really like a butter. Really like a snooty buckskin.
Really?
Yeah, I do. And then, okay, so that would be my second.
Hammer dick in the first pin that was so hard.
Oh, yeah,
you're like, you're beautiful,
dick.
You fucking
oh, yes.
dick.
Oh, yes.
That's my least favorite color, I
really?
Think. Yeah, they just look like an afterthought. Like, God really? Forgot. Yeah, like, they just kind of look like God forgot what color he was going to make it. And he was like, ah, shit. Or, like, it started to be a buckskin and, like, he accidentally put a
bay in there.
Like, he accidentally grabbed the wrong brush and it got brown. And he was like, shit, now I've got to figure out what color this thing is. Yeah.
Well, and then I'd probably put that as my second. But I love me a just plain dun red horse.
Oh, a red dun?
No, just a plain red horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then gray.
for me, I am funny. I'm such a typical person. I don't so much have a favorite color as I love a blue-eyed horse.
I hate blue-eyed horses. I hate them.
I don't care.
With a fiery passion.
I don't care what color they are. Ugh. So, anything with blue eyes, I'm a sucker.
They look like a devil's spawn to me when they have blue eyes.
See, I love a blue-eyed horse. I will take a blue-eyed horse over anything. If it's got glass, eyes, it can live at my house. Ugh. I think I love like stockings and a bald face. So I like a sorrel with stockings and a bald face. So I would go from a blue-eyed horse to a stocking-legged sorrel. And then I would say I like Overo paints. Like not
anything that paint is a paint horse, I will.
I love Overo paints. Like I love when they're mostly dominantly colored, but they just have like side patches or like a spot on each side of the neck. Like I like a true Overo paint. Not base body colors, not. But yeah, I like a crop out quarter horse or an Overo paint, basically something with a lot of white. And I've always been that way. My absolute favorite. I saw a horse one time that was kind of colored like Jasper Bay, but he had four white legs, bald face, and blue eyes. So he kind of looked like he was Clydesdale colored, but he was a quarter horse and he had blue eyes. And Jacob and I tried to buy him. He brought $40,000 and we bid like $32,000 just because Jacob knew like we would never find. He was a stud colt. He was a Spook's Got a Gun or something. Spook something. But I'm just telling you that like even Jacob when he saw him was like, oh my God, that's your dream horse, isn't it? And I was like, yeah. And I mean, we just didn't have a purpose for him. And I felt like at that time in our life, we didn't really, like that was a, at that time in our life, it was a lot of money. And I was just going to pony racehorses on him on the track. And I want to say we went to 28 or 30. Maybe we were at 28 and somebody bid 30. Because I just remember being like, we can't do that. He ended up bringing 42. But he was like a dapple, like bay with dapples, four white legs, belly, right on the belly, big spot. Big bald face and blue eyes. And I just thought that was the... And he was a big stocky horse, but he was reining bred. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So, anyway, I love that. I think I like a sorrel with a lot of chrome, but I like a bay with a lot of chrome, too.
I like just... Give me something plain.
And, you know, Jacob likes roans. Well, I mean, we know he likes...
Jacob really like loves roans, too.
Jacob loves roans and buckskins. And he'll buy lots of roans. You'll see lots of good roans and buckskins.
Yes. let's see. What's your favorite non-horsey sport?
I don't watch any sports. No. I don't give two shits. I golfed in high school. I was pretty good. I don't have the patience to be out there that long though because I just want to get home and get back to the barn.
Yep.
It's like that, like like, you know how on Family Feud they hit the buzzer?
Yeah.
They have that one the other day, did you see, where they were like, what's the first thing you do when you find out unannounced guests are coming over? And she was like, dude, hide the drugs! So they're like, what's your favorite activity outside of horses? And I'm like, sex! Like, you're like, no, wrong answer! God, Tara, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, sorry. Is that not an activity? Shit, sorry.
I would say it is.
Sorry. You know,
it's
like
a sport. You get a workout, don't you?
I'm just saying. That's where my brain went. Like when she was like, "What's your favorite sport?" I'm like, "Sex." That's Tara. That wrong.
No.
Sorry. Fuck.
Top 10 meds that you absolutely have to have in your personal tack box.
Oh, I don't even know that I have 10. Bupivacaine, Dex, Ace.
Yep, that's what I would say.
And I keep 4 or 5 bags of fluids with lines and pumps. I've probably got, I think right now we're down to 4, but they're 5,000. They're actually 5,000 ml.
Okay.
So 5,000 cc's of saline bags, so that if I have horses colic, I've got fluids on hands to start, you know, start running fluids right away. Mm-hmm. I've got 2 or 3 bags left of the 1,000 ml's. But I mean, honestly, I don't keep a lot of meds. Bute, Banamine, Dex, Ace. And the reason I keep Ace and Bute is for horses that might come in foundered. Yep. The Dex is for heaves and hives, which are not the same thing. And Banamine in case something ties up or colics. I keep a bottle of Lasix, too, because we've had some that come in that kind of, you know, stretches racehorses off the track, especially, will get kind of like, you know, stop and stretch out to pee and not be able to pee. But I could give Lasix and Dex and get a good response in those horses. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a tie-up type.
Yeah.
But give 5 cc's of Dex in the muscle, 10 cc's of Banamine in the vein, and, you know, about 4 cc's of Lasix. And we don't know why, but we get a lot of geldings off the track that can't pee when they first come in. And it's kind of different. We kind of have to work at it. You know what I think does it? I think they ace them at the cell barns. And ace, if you give lots and lots of ace to a gilding, it can paralyze their penis a little bit.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And I think that some racehorses go through the cell barns and they give them lots of ace to keep them from acting a fool. And then they come to us and can't pee. And so we have to do a steroid to kind of reverse it, and then some Banamine to relax the muscles, and then some Lasix. Boop.
That's the same. More Ace.
Nope, some Lasix to let them go ahead and stretch out and pee. So I'm a big fan of Lasix. I keep a bottle of Lasix, and I keep a lot of GastroGuard. I order GastroGuard every time I get the chance. I don't like GastroGuard as a long-term solution because it stops the production of acid in the stomach. And then when you stop giving it, the body starts producing acid again and floods the stomach with acid, and it's really hard on one. But I like it for a temporary fix when you get horses that come in with horrible gastric ulcer problems, and you can just at least get them kind of back on feed until you can get an actual, like, the solution or something like that into them. Because some horses, you can't put a feed through supplement. They won't eat feed, So I've got to give them some GastroGuard until they get back on feed, so we can feed them a feed-through supplement that will actually, like, fix the problem. So,
yes.
So if it were me, I would keep Bute, Banamine, Dexamethasone, Lasix, Acepromazine, fluids, GastroGuard. So that's 7. I keep
electrolyte paste.
I do.
You got fluids, but
I do keep
paste.
Electrolyte paste. I keep immediate response only because I mean. Just to try to help. But a lot of that stuff, I mean, you know, how much does it work? I don't know. Or how much it just makes you feel better that you're doing everything you can.
Exactly.
I keep soul packs, and I keep farriers. What's that stuff called? Magic cushion or whatever,
yes.
Just in case. I mean, so we keep a lot of stuff on hand. Just I keep cotton and cotton rolls and vet wrap. You know, just, I mean, we have stuff that's basic, but as far as drugs, I just don't have a lot. I mean, I've got the basics.
Yeah.
Exceed.
Exceed.
I keep a giant bottle of Exceed that costs $400 and something, and we replace it every time it gets low. We keep Exceed. And penicillin and Genicin. So I guess that's 10. Pen, Gen, Exceed. There you go. But everything that we keep is just for horse trading. It's not like, not for the resale part of it. It's just because when horses unload on us, we never know what's wrong with them. Like, we never know why. Sometimes people dump horses at the sale barn because they have something bad wrong with them, and they'll give them something just to mask it, and then you own it, and the next day it's fucked up.
Yep. Well, I think we've kind of pretty much all of it.
Well, this is Q&A part 2, and that's a wrap. So we will be back with more podcasting tomorrow or the next day or whenever we're free again. But we love you, and we appreciate everything. And please don't forget to Join the Wild Tribe after hours and to send stars if you watch our videos.
Bye, guys.
Bye.